Stop.
Accession number 17361, reel 3.
Mr. Glassbrook, reel 3.
You asked me... Oh, it's still... I didn't know I'd still got this on. You asked me about sabotage on the farms, and I was saying how if you take a herd of cows out to graze and you put them in a clover field all afternoon and then take them down and let them drink all the water they want to, they blow up like barrage balloons and explode. Not very nice for the cows, but it was a form of sabotage, and it used to drive the farmers crazy. I never actually did that, but I know several farms that suffered from it.
Now, you were telling me that you went to Posen next.
Yes, went back to Posen.
What happened to you there?
Well, you went out on working parties. It was there I first came in contact with the Jewish people, because they had Jews working there, or the WASPs as we called them, because they had striped suits. And we used to help them all we could, give them what food we could spare if we'd had Red Cross parcels, because we got those at Posen. If you had a Red Cross parcel that month, we used to manage to get some food to these Jewish people who were working. It was mostly women, actually. And it was the first time I came in contact with them. And we worked on several projects there, and then from there I was sent to Teschen, because I think they wanted the guards for the Russian front. So they got rid of that camp and sent us all to other camps, and we went to Teschen, which is on the Czechoslovakian border. While we were there, one night all hell broke loose, and Tito's men jumped into the camp from the trees outside, killed all the guards in the watchtowers, and started spraying bullets everywhere. We were all laying on the floors, and the bullets were going in one side of the wooden huts and out the other. The SS turned out with their dogs and everything, and we had quite a night of it.
This was the local resistance?
This was Tito's men, yes, the local resistance. And from there...
What, can you describe anything else that happened in that attack?
No, not only that there were a lot of Germans killed, but they didn't blame us for it. But they had a lot of Russians there, and they decided to blame a few of those for it, I think. Took them out and shot them. And
what were the resistance attacking?
Just the Germans in general. And then from there we were sent up to the coal mines, which was up near Auschwitz, and I worked down the coal mines for a year there.
What was that like?
Wasn't too good, because you had to do 10 ton a day and carry your own pit props, put your own pit props up. And as I say, we had to do 10 ton a day. They used to blast the face, and there was no extraction, so you were working. You had to wait for a while the dust settled a bit, but then you had to go back in on the face and shovel coal, and the dust got on your chest, nearly choked you. And I'm just at this moment in the throes of an argument with the war pensions people, because they say it didn't affect my chest problem, which I have now and have had since the war. I say it did, they say it didn't, I don't know. what the outcome of it will be. But anyway, we worked there. One day, the cages which they used to send us down the mine in were supposed to have not more than four people in them. They used to pack a dozen of us in, and a Polish miner who did the blasting. They wouldn't allow us to do the blasting, actually. And we went whizzing down. Oh, sorry, I touched it again. Sorry. We went whizzing down at a devil of a speed down the shaft, and we didn't take any notice because ignorance is bliss. But the old miner, the old Polish miner, he just collapsed on the floor, passed out. And so, of course, we whizzed past the bit we knew where we were supposed to get out, and suddenly it stopped. And we went up and down on the end of the cable like a bit of elastic, you know, up and down the shaft. But luckily the cable held, and then gradually we were pulled back up to where we had to get out. And of course we didn't discover till afterwards that the brakes had failed on the lift shaft, you know. And that's why the old miner had passed out. But we were quite happy about it because we'd never had the experience before. When we first went down the mines there, there were Italians working down there. So there was a free fight every day down there because we didn't like the Italians. And
why didn't you like the Italians?
Well, we were fighting them, weren't we, in Italy? Well, they weren't then, but we had been. I mean, because they were prisoners of war, the Germans as well then. But we didn't like the Italians anyway, so we used to take the mickey out of them, and it always started a fight, so the Germans took them out of the mine and left us down there on our own, sent them somewhere else. But we continued working down that mine under different conditions, because in some places you had to work stripped right off, and in other places the water dripped through the roof and you were soaking wet and dead cold all the time. But we worked down there until one day we were suddenly told, you're not going to work today, and we didn't know why. And then next morning we were sent to work again. And when we got down there, and we were working on a face a very long way from the pit head, and we could hear this, feel the earth shaking, and could hear the rumbling, you know, and it was the Russian guns. So the next morning they said, right, tomorrow we march. And so we packed all our gear. It was deep snow then, and we tore the bunks that we were sleeping on to pieces and made sledges. We were given a Red Cross parcel apiece. And of course we set off the next day. Luckily, I, for some reason or other, had kept quite a bit of clothing, warm clothing, that I'd made and got through the Red Cross. I'd saved it, and we all had by that time new British greatcoats issued, which were a marvellous help. And anyway, I'd made gloves out of two layers of blanket mittens. I'd made some of those, and off we set in the snow. And as we walked out of our camp onto the road, we could see on our left the Jews just in their uniforms standing there. There were about 150 Jews from Auschwitz camp up the road standing there, and they marched behind us all the way. And of course then we travelled from then right down through to Regensburg.
Did you have any contact with the Jews who were marching behind?
Not a lot. And when we got to a place called Stiefelstadt one night, we stayed there. They put us in these buildings, which were empty. And they put us in there. They had been used by German troops, I think, before. But anyway, they put us in. I'm not sure if it was Stiefelstadt or the one after. And I had a terrible cold. So the RAMC bloke who was with us gave me some sweat tablets and some aspirin, and I got my head down. I hadn't been laying there asleep, couldn't have been half an hour, and there was banging and clanging, and the German guard and the guard commander came in, and he said through the interpreter, "Up the road are the SS. Behind them are the Feldpolizei." They were the worst of the SS. They were the field police, and they shot anything in sight, always. "And behind them are the Russians. So we're getting out. If you want to stay, you can stay, but you won't live long enough to know anything about it if you stay. Because if the SS don't shoot you, the Feldpolizei will. So we're marching now, and if you want to come with us, you come." So off we went. I was full of dope. Two chaps got hold of me. And we marched all that night. In the middle of the night, we were in a big forest. We'd just gone over the River Oder. And we were in this big forest, and the Jews were behind us. And there were four great big artillery limbers came through, and beautiful Shire horses pulling them, six horses to a limber, no guns, just the limbers, and SS men riding them in their saddles, and I suppose they were taking them somewhere to safety. They could, but suddenly they saw these Jews marching behind us. So they just pulled the horses over and they rode those four limbers straight through those Jews, killing them, maiming them, and the screams and that were terrible. And anyway, they went right through these Jews, and when they'd gone past, they were laughing and they drove off up the road, all of them. And we stopped, and our guards went back, and those that were still alive they shot, and there weren't any in a fit state hardly to march on. I think they put two or three of them on a wagon, but the rest of them they just tipped them into the ditch and left them there in the snow.
Who were these people who were responsible?
SS. Artillery. Well, they were never brought to book for it. I mean, none of them hardly were the atrocities they carried out. But I've... the president of our Prisoner of War Association at Paignton, and funny enough, when we first built the association, I happened to be talking to him one day, and he started talking about that as well. And I said to him, "How did you know about that?" He said, "Well, I was there, wasn't I, when it happened?" I said, "Well, you must have been standing near to me then, because it was the middle of the night. I mean, there must have been some moon or something, because we could see it all going on, and the white snow, you know, reflection of the moon on the snow." And it turned out that another chap as well said, "Well, I was there, you know, I saw it." And so I know there are two witnesses over there that saw it the same as I did. And unless you saw it, you'd never believe it, really, what they did to those Jews. Terrible. Anyway, where are we now? That was when we were marching on the death march. So we marched on from there, digging our way through snowdrifts and one thing and another, and then they used to put us in barns at night. In farm, we come to a village with a lot of farm houses, because out there all the houses and the farms were all in one place, not spread out like they are. And they put us in the barns. And then we'd stay there, frozen stiff. Well, we used to sleep in the hay and the straw, which was warm. And we had to get what food we could. We used to knock the chicken off in the farms and things like that, and cook and eat anything. In one farm we stayed in, I and a pal of mine were so hungry we waited for the old farmer to feed the pigs, and then kicked them out the trough and out the grub, and we were taking the spuds out of it and eating it, which gave us the runs for about a week, because it was full of sulphur and one thing and another, this pig food. And we marched on day after day, and eventually I had, which I wanted to show you actually, but I can't find it, a thing which asked us to join the German army and fight the Russians.
How did you feel about that?
We weren't interested.
Did anybody respond?
But if I can find it, I'll send it to you, because that might be worth putting in the archives. And we got that just before we got to the hills above Dresden. And because we were in such a bad shape, they allowed us 2 days rest there. If not, we would have been in Dresden when they blew it to bits, as were a lot of prisoners of war, which they don't tell you about, because they marched them from all over Germany, and there were quite a few in Dresden that night when they blew it off the map. We just heard it. But also killed thousands of people there. About 30,000 people died that night in Dresden. Why, I don't know, because, as I say, there were mostly refugees. There were thousands of refugees in Dresden, and quite a few prisoners of war, and of course the people who lived there anyway. And I know it was retaliation, or they say, for Bristol or somewhere in this country.
And then where did you go from Dresden?
We marched on, and they suddenly found a train for us with goods trucks. And we all piled into the trucks. And as we piled into the trucks, a fighter, whether it was British or American, I don't know what, came out of the sky and blew the engine off the rails. But they got another engine, and they took us down into Regensburg, and we were stuck in the middle of the sidings there all night. The guards just went off and left us, and we were all locked in these cattle trucks. And of course the American planes and the British were passing over all night long. We were waiting for them to have a go at us, but luckily they didn't. And next day they took us out of the cattle trucks and marched us through Regensburg to the other side and put us in barns. And we promptly got up on the roof and put British prisoners of war in great big whitewashed letters on the roof, because opposite us was an aerodrome where they tested their jet planes. They were testing them all night. So anyway, the Americans came over one day and dropped a few bombs on the aerodrome, and they took us off the railway work, and we had been mending holes in the railroad, and we used to be marched down there every morning to the railroad, and it was their last marshalling yard that they had left, the Germans, and they were very keen to keep it open, and so they marched about 100 of us down there every morning to fill in the bomb holes on the railroad. One morning the air raid siren went. We were split in 250 lots, one each side of the railroad, and we were taken down under a barracks in an air raid shelter. But the 50 the other side, or about 100 the other side, they were just had to go down the other side of the bank and lay in ditches. They were all killed. The Americans bombed them and killed them. And they'd all been prisoners of war for 5 years. Where we were in camp, as I say, there was this aerodrome the other side. And the next morning we were taken off the railroad job. And we were taken on to the aerodrome to fill in the holes that we been previously made bomb holes, fill them in on the runways. And all of a sudden we looked up, and about a quarter of a mile away were all the airfield offices, barracks, workshops, all about 100 yards or more away. And we looked up, and over the back of these buildings the sky was black with American bombers. And we just ran to a big ditch at the edge of the field and laid down in it. We were watching the buildings. They just went up in a pile of dust, and then they proceeded to blanket bomb the aerodrome, which meant that one layer dropped bombs, then the aircraft behind them came over the top and dropped their bombs right across, saturating the whole aerodrome with bombs and gradually creeping towards where we were laying. We thought that it was the end of the war for us, but luckily about 100 yards by the time we were getting the dirt and dust over us, they stopped bombing and went on. It wasn't a very nice experience. In fact, I think all of us were pretty shaken by it. They decided next day, during that night actually, we got Red Cross parcels from those wonderful people who brought them through from Switzerland in lorries.
Who are these people?
Red Cross, the British Red Cross. Civilians drove the lorries, and of the two that reached us that night, we understand they were the two, only two left of six that started out the previous day. The rest have been bombed, because they travelled during the night, so they took a great risk that up in the air, anything coming down, they couldn't see the Red Crosses on top of the lorries. Anyway, they reached us and gave us Red Cross parcels. Next day, we were moved out about 2 miles away to a village and stuck in farms. We were there for 3 days, and all of a sudden a helicopter appeared over the top of the farm with American markings on it. And they dropped a note telling us all to go down to Veelkoven, the village down further, and that the Americans were there, they'd taken it over. And that's when we met General Patton, he'd released us.
Can you describe what happened when you met him?
Well, I met him by going into, he was in a sloss there, they'd taken the old boy away, who was a count or something, and put him in a prison camp up at Nuremberg. And he was in there, sitting behind a table, and he said, in American, which I won't attempt to imitate, he said that his infantry were about 125 miles away, and they couldn't stay there, they'd got to move on. They were there for 2 days only, and then they'd move on. They were going to build a cage for prisoners, German prisoners that they took, and they were going to leave us behind to guard the prisoners, and that every morning the American army would come in and take them away, which happened. And we were there for 3 weeks, and I understand that I should have had a medal for that, because I was attached to the American army for 3 weeks. But
what impression did Patton make on you?
Well, he was a man all go. He said, you guys can look after the prisoners. He said, these krauts that we send back to you, or words to that effect, he, very American. He said, but we haven't got time. He said, if you want food, go out and shoot it or take it. He said, if you're short of food, he said, you've got to look after yourselves. And so we were there for 3 weeks, unshaven, sitting there, bull of a man. But the troops shook me, because we were still British and we were still shaving every day when we got a chance, but they hadn't shaved for days, and they'd got Buffalo Bill written across their backs, and pistols all over themselves, you know, real Texas cowboys. But they went on and left us, and they used to send back German prisoners of war. You get about 30 or 40 Germans coming up the road with two Americans guarding them, and they'd put them in the cage, and we looked after them all night and see they didn't escape. Then next morning the black transport had come in and fetched them. Yeah, they're all Negroes, American Negroes. And about 3 weeks later, they suddenly turned up one morning with these trucks, and they said, come on, you guys, you're going home. And they took us to Landshut's aerodrome, stuck us in Dakotas, flew us down to Belgium, where we stayed the night, American camp, and next morning the Lancasters came over and took us home.
What did the British authorities do for you when you got back?
They didn't do anything for us, they weren't near there. It was all American where we were.
In Britain?
In Britain, well, when we got home, we went to Wing Aerodrome, where we were deloused, and given clean uniform, new uniforms. Any insignias you had were sewn on by ladies from WVS. And then that night, they gave us all £80 apiece. And they said, if any of you live within 25 miles of this camp, you can go home tomorrow morning. And of course,